M30. Number 3B.
You know, we can see perhaps the wholeness of those four levels better when we ask ourselves, what would each level actually be if it would be taken per se? And this is a most interesting question because it's a very practical question. It's a question which you have to be sure about, because so often the discussion will turn around this very point. If we take the level of science per se, that highest level of science, cut away from all the other levels, just that one, and therefore see that that level has nothing at all to do with practical living, and that we just see all that there is going on is the divine principle, knowing itself as the divine principle, and therefore operating as the divine principle, what we would get would be a kind of fatalism, where we would just see, yes, God is doing that what he's doing anyway, and I can't do anything to it, I don't have to know anything about it, it happens anyway the way the divine principle is operating or God is operating, and I would have a sense of fatalism. Or if I would take the level of divine science alone and cut that out of the whole chart and just would say, yes, there is only one being, and that one being is all-inclusive, and there is only one universe, and so there is just the oneness of being, being small b, oneness of being, then I would state practically the same statements as the mystics do. The mystics also are preaching and expressing their ideas with the very same terms that the textbook expresses it. Sometimes when you read very good mystics, like Meister Eckhart or so, and read what he says, you could nearly say, well, this could be out of the textbook, when you just take the statements per se. Because naturally the textbook has many statements on the level of divine science, therefore many statements about the oneness of being. And so the mystics who are on that level of just bringing home the sense that there is just one being and that God and Creator is one, Creator and creation is one, and that there is only one being going on, and they would write pages and pages and books out of that oneness, and you find statements in there which you could have in Mrs. Eddy's writings. That's why so often somebody would come along and say, oh, you know, I have read so-and-so, some mystic, a modern or an ancient mystic, and say, it is exactly like Christian Science. And it may be that the terms, the sentences used, are the same as in the Christian Science textbook. The difference is that they are cut out of the other levels. The mystics will not teach anything about absolute Christian Science, about the relationship between truth and idea, and the calculus of idea. They will not teach anything about explaining why truth uncovers and annihilates error. So we have to be aware, you see, that alone a statement that somebody makes does not mean that they also include the other aspect of the science of being. I remember once I was reading Meister Eckhart, one of those great mystics of the Middle Age, and I could find statement after statement which practically word by word would be in Mrs. Eddy's writings. And I could then understand why people would come along and said, I have read this and this book is exactly like Mrs. Eddy. Yes, the text is exactly like Mrs. Eddy, the sentences are perhaps exactly like Mrs. Eddy, because it doesn't take very much, it doesn't take really very much to state mystical truth. That's the easiest thing. Every fool can do that, actually. And if I would have time, I could prove it to you. Yeah, I could. Because there is a terrific scientific criterion behind it, why it is possible that any fool can make the most scientific statements. But the question is if such a statement has a truth value. truth content. No, I have to stop with that thing or I get going because I can get very hot on that point. But it's very easy. That's why you have in Buddhism and in every big religion you have the statement that God is all, that God is one, that all is one, that God is all in all. This is not something that Mrs. Eddy alone teaches. That's practically every mystic that teaches that, yeah? And God is all in all. And if we don't have the other levels, what does it mean? Well, it means that God is all in all. It means that God is all in all, therefore God is the all that is in the rabbits and in the rats and in the atom bomb and in the war and everywhere. Huh? If we can't put more categories into that statement, therefore if we cannot put absolute Christian signs into it and explain the relationship of what is the all and what is in and what is the all small a, if we can't put structure into that whole statement, then that whole statement is true, but it has no truth content, because it doesn't say anything what the all is that is in the all. Not at all. It doesn't say if that all is matter, or if it's body, or if it's electricity, or what. So don't be impressed by the mystics. It soothes the human mind. It quiets the human mind and puts mortal mind or the human mind asleep. That's all what it does. But it doesn't really bring us into any understanding. So divine science, cut away from all the other levels, would just be mysticism. But the same statements put into the framework of all the other levels is no more mysticism. It's divine science. And again, you can see that it is not the elements that matter, but the relationship of the elements that matters. It's not the category per se that matters, but it's the relationship of that category with other category that matters. If you just take the category of divine science per se, it can be either mysticism, or it can be just blunt foolishness, or it can be divine science, according to the relationship. If there is no relationship to any other thing, it's just foolishness. And if there is just a relationship to a human sentimental mind, then it is mysticism. But if there is relationship to the categories of absolute Christian science and Christian science, then it becomes really divine science. So let's take the next one. And if we try to cut out absolute Christian science out of the whole model, out of all the other levels, what do we get? Then we only think in the absolute. That's nice. We only reckon from the absolute and in absolute terms and in ideas. And that's very nice. But if we don't see that that is related to Christian science, that it is an idea that can be made practical in order to destroy error, then absolute Christian science becomes absolutism. And absolutism is the very counterfeit of absolute Christian science. So when we call somebody an absolutist, we don't mean that he's thinking from the absolute. We mean that he's thinking from the absolute, but no further than that. That he makes an ism of one category. That he shows this is the only and one and the important category, and there are no other categories. Then we call these Christian scientists, or they are actually no more Christian scientists. We call them the absolutists that say error is nothing and therefore you don't have to deal with error, therefore you don't have to handle error, therefore you don't have to correct error. Whereas absolute Christian science does the same thing, that it goes out from a divine principle, calculates absolutely, and then sees the impact on the human and takes in the level of Christian science and sees how such an idea has the power to analyze and to uncover and to annihilate its counterfeit belief. And then it's no more absolutism, but then it's pure science that lends itself to be also be used as an applied science. Or let's take Christian science level and cut that out of the whole chart and say, all I'm interested in is in Christian science because I'm interested how, with Christian science, I can solve the negative problems. Well, what we get would be just a kind of pragmatism. You call it pragmatism. And these people say, I still have my feet on the earth. I don't have my head up in the clouds. I'm standing right on the earth, and I want to see how Christian Science can be applied to the negative problems. All right, he can do that. And he gets worse and worse and worse. That's all that he gets. Because he makes reality of that level and accepts, actually, that there is a duality in existence, a reality of duality, namely truth versus error. And if we stay too long in the truth versus error, we really make reality of that duality. That which frees us to make Christian Science just to be a pragmatic religion is really that we lift thought and consciousness to the level of absolute Christian Science, to divine science, and to science itself. Then Christian Science is just one aspect and becomes, as we go on, more and more a side aspect, an aspect that loses more and more of importance. And more we begin to see that actually our thought is roaming in the realm of absolute Christian Science, where we're thinking from principle and as the ideas of principle. So can you see how you can reason out just for yourself the wholeness of those levels which we have and see that each one needs the other one? Yeah. Why, I can take that again, why do we need all these four levels? I go again in the ascending way and ask again, what would we have if we only would have the level of Christian Science and not the others? Then, as I said, we would always deal with concrete error. We would constantly be engaged in dealing with error. We would, so to say, ask for error, because only then Christian Science would be practical if we have this court. Well, this is animal magnetism. This would no more really be Christian Science. And it becomes a tiring thing, constantly to combat error. And that's something a Christian Science practitioner should be aware of. You may know other practitioners, but when I look over my over 60 years of conscious watching the practitioners, right from my boyhood when I became for the first time aware, it's now nearly 60 years since I had the first practitioner sitting at my bedside. If I look over that whole history, I can see that usually those practitioners who just stay in that practice of truth over error, of truth over error, that they get tired. They get tired. They are not blossoming. They may have a big practice until they really can't do it anymore. They get so burnt that they don't look anymore as a fresh flower. Just beaming, it's tiring. And there would be no progress. Let's see what would be missing if we only would have the level of Christian Science and of absolute Christian Science, but not divine science, nor science itself. If we would hold and stop at the level of absolute Christian Science, then we would still have principle and its idea, a kind of duality. Principle and plus idea. Constantly seeing that we have to be busy in our consciousness, computing the right ideas, always to think about the rightness of ideas, to see the true facts of being. It's a thinking process which has to take in every problem per se, because absolute Christian Science computes a specific problem. And you know, after a while you feel, oh well, there are so many problems popping up. And after a while you find out that actually one only knows those problems of which we are conscious of. And we are not even therefore handling those problems which lie slumbering in the subconscious. And so something within us really drives us further, because it says, why should I at all always compute rightly? Why not take in the oneness of being and let the oneness of being operate, and let the oneness of being operate in the conscious realm and in the subconscious realm? Why not think about the universal salvation instead about the individual salvation? Do we have a lot of problems to solve, or do we only have one problem to solve? Namely, that there is just one life and truth and love. And that naturally pushes us much higher to the level of divine science. But you can see, if we would never have that drive within ourselves, again, just with Christian Science and absolute Christian Science, we would only be able to touch those problems about which we are conscious and which we are aware of. But actually, the beauty of treatment in the science of being is this, that when we come to divine science, that we will treat, from the point of view of divine science, the whole universe of ideas, such that things are being demonstrated in our life, on the level of absolute Christian Science and Christian Science, that things will be demonstrated in our life of which we were not even conscious of. Things will happen in our life which, when they happen, we are not even realizing what a big thing is happening. That the unexpected is happening. We are not looking out then for a demonstration of something enormous, but we are not looking out for anything at all except the oneness of being, and that oneness of being precipitates itself on our lives and begins to guide and lead and channelize and direct our life in such ways and means towards such aims that we were never thinking of. And therefore we make much bigger, much more essential demonstrations when we are not engaged in trying to solve either a positive or negative problem. When we are just engaged in demonstrating the synonymous terms, that's divine science. Just demonstrating the synonymous terms, they are so big that they are going to use us, in the way we were never thinking they would use us. Even, as I said, at first, we may not even see the beauty of it, the bigness of it, and only looking back after years and years, we can realize that then something has been initiated into our life, which has become the mainstream of our life, the main mission of our life, the main purpose of our lives. Oh, it's so much bigger. Can you see? As long as we stay in Christian Science, we solve conscious negative problems. When we go to absolute Christian Science, we begin to demonstrate positive problems, but problems of which we are aware of. But when we come to divine science, we demonstrate not negative problems nor positive problems, no problems at all. We demonstrate what being is, and that is a million times bigger than our concept of the truth, because it's God's own consciousness of itself that is being demonstrated. And therefore only then really we are the Son of God, the one truth, that Son which is a capital S, the Son of Truth, not the small s, the Son of God. The capital Son of Truth we are demonstrating, the Christ. We are demonstrating our Christ selfhood. And so we can see that we cannot stop at any point in the scale of being. Another question that comes up here and there is, which says, should we start with the ascending or with the descending way? The answer to it is yes and no and both. I think the answer is so, that in the Old Testament, the answer would have been start with the ascending way. Because Jacob in his dream saw the angels first ascending and then descending. That's the consciousness of the Old Testament at that period, when thought was interested in reaching out to know what is the nature of God, and therefore the thought was ascending and could see that in the measure as God, as thought is ascending, we will get a blessing down from heaven. That would be the descending way. Once we have done the ascending way with its blessing of the descending, then we would see that we start always from the descending way. Like in the New Testament, when Jesus, it was said in John that no man has ascended up to heaven but he that came down from heaven. See, the first phase is to come down from heaven, which means in the translation to come down from the level of science itself and look down, right down from the level of science itself to the point of human belief, and doing what to the human belief? Overturning it and overturning it so as that we can ascend again. No man ascended up to heaven but he that has come down from heaven. But actually the best answer is science, namely even the Son of Man who is in heaven. The best state is to stay in heaven and not always to try to climb up and down the ladder of the four levels, but to entertain that consciousness of the level of science itself, where we just see that there is nothing going on but the Infinite One, principle being aware of its own, to be its own principle, and that's that, and sit there and no more but from that point. But the only thing we do is to look down, but not to go down. To look down and see what such a state of consciousness is doing to the world. What such a state of consciousness is doing to the material world. And see that if we stay up in heaven, the Son of Man who is in heaven, stay at the level of science itself, that we see that this consciousness is going to reach every plane of thought. Therefore we can see that actually, you see, we should make a big correction in that chart. Instead of showing it as a two-dimensional chart, we should put it into a three-dimensional sphere where we see that we start from science and come down to Christian science in order to lift it up and come back to science. So that actually in the chart, you know, you have indicated that because the whole chart starts from the point of view of science and translates itself until you come to the point of science, in Christian science, where you see the same divine principle again as we had on the level of science itself. So that we could see it should be a scroll, that it should be a sphere, that there is actually not an up and down, but that there is just that infinite circle, that infinite sphere, where there is no beginning and no ending. That finally we can't say, here I start and there I end.